Good morning. Today is Friday, August the 26th. Joining us this morning is Cal Poly Humboldt Provost Jen Capps. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to see you.
Yeah, well, you just don't hang around too many old guys anymore,
oh,
do
wow.
you?
Yeah. Here and there.
Yeah. Yeah. This youth movement thing at Humboldt is just a little interesting.
All right.
Are you ready for our Why Do We Say That?
Yes, absolutely.
Why do we say someone gets their ducks in a row?
Ah, boy. I feel like when I see ducks and like little ducklings, like they're all in a row following mom. So I don't know. That's what I would say.
Primitive versions of modern bowling were known many centuries ago. Huh. Pins of various sizes and shapes were employed. Eventually, they were standardized at 15 inches in both height and circumference. Originally called 10 pins, the equipment used in Europe was employed in the earliest American bowling saloons. The game was modified by the introduction of short, slender pins that were compared with a duck, and by an extension, duck pins. So many people reset so many pins in rows that one who completes a task is commended as having put his
ducks in a row. Duck pin bowling, though. Isn't that with a smaller ball? I feel like I've played duck pin bowling.
I know frozen turkey bowling.
Okay. All right. That sounds way fun, though.
One time, when was it? I think, the store's still, the grocery store in Valley West.
Okay.
We had a promotion. Contest kind of thing, one of those where you have like 2 minutes to go and fill a shopping cart kind of things. And part of that whole presentation was frozen turkey bowling.
Huh.
You know, you put the 2 liters down and you...
Yes, that sounds like an event. Maybe something worthy of bringing back.
Yeah.
Don't give our students any ideas.
If you guys want to underwrite it, we can figure this thing out. I can find that file pretty quickly.
That sounds fun. I like it.
Oh, so obviously life at Humboldt has changed a little bit since last we got together.
Yes.
What kind of takeaways do you have after the first couple of weeks?
Well, classes started yesterday, so... So really it's just...
But arrivals have been occurring.
Correct. So arrivals started last week. So move-in started last week. And, you know, I've been here 2 years and a month and all during pandemic time. So the presence of students, faculty were pretty limited on campus. So it's like bustling on campus as well as we've seen, a slight increase in enrollment. And so between all of those things, it feels like there's just so much activity because people are back or... Housing on campus is full, you know, there's far more in-person classes.
That's why I would think off-site thing is kind of gone by the wayside.
How do you mean?
That a majority of the classroom attendees
are
sitting there warming a chair
instead
of snoozing at their computer. Laptop.
You got it. We're about 65-70%, no more than that, maybe 70-ish, 70-75% face-to-face courses now, with about 25-30% online or hybrid, where part of the class is online and part is in person. So, yeah.
Is that a permanent thing?
I hope it is. I hope it will be.
The 25% that there's a lot of... Yeah. One of the things that I had always argued, and I still feel, is that class size doesn't matter. It's the quality of the instructor. You know, if I'm one of 10,000 in an auditorium and Peter Drucker was presenting business, I'm going to get a whole lot more than some guy who's all theory, has never signed a check.
Sure.
That's telling me how business should be run.
Yeah.
So the off-site learning concept to me, or the virtual teaching, whatever the phraseology is, to me sounds like it opens up so many possibilities to be able to see the best and the brightest and who the latest, coolest is, rather than somebody that got hired 25 or 30 years ago. And maybe they're current and maybe they're not so current.
Yeah, I think I agree with some of what you're saying. I think it depends on the kind of class, like, and I do think it depends a lot on the instructor. Like,
sure.
For example, if you have a nursing student that's learning how to do a blood draw or learning those practical skills, I don't want 100 students in the class because they're not going to be able to learn how to do that.
Right, there's a hands-on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so
not Annie, the CPR dummy.
Correct. No. So we certainly want to make sure it's not just an observation, but they're actually where they're able to demonstrate their skills. But to your point, I mean, being able to attract bigger name folks or being, you know, who may not live locally or be able to create access to people that are working that want to seek education, people that are far away. Thinking about the way I try to think about it is what do prospective students need or existing students need? And then how do we shape how we offer classes to our students versus us just kind of deciding, oh, this is when I like to teach class or how I would like to teach class.
Would it be practical, I guess is the word. That might not be the right word.
Okay.
I'm thinking so many of us, you probably learn more going to a convention than you do the preceding 3 or 4 months of not going to a convention.
Okay.
Okay, in your niche. Same with me. I mean, you kind of do the do, but as far as the injection of new ideas and thoughts and processes and perspectives, going to a convention is either mind-blowing or confirming where you are.
Right.
So for some of these kids, I guess they would be maybe at the junior level. Send them to a convention. And
yeah.
Immerse them in the real deal and see if that's something that really lights them up and, okay, now they can't see straight, they're so excited. Or if they come in and say, you know, I think I need to switch my major to psychology.
No, I think you're right on about that. And we do try to do a fair amount of that, as well as have students do research with faculty and then go present the research at different conferences and things like that. Or if they're engaged as like peer mentors, a little bit of older students, like junior, senior students that have had some success to help support newer students, and then going to conferences to learn about how to do those sorts of things.
Of course, I'm probably thinking more business major just because that's where I play.
Oh, absolutely.
Rather than going to an accounting convention. I'm sure that there are similar things, but...
Yep. Oh, 100%. Yeah. And I think you're right. It depends on the discipline. I think some of the... What's exciting about going to conventions and conferences and things is also that interaction with people.
The bar talk.
Exactly.
Not in the seminar setting.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's all of that, right? Getting out of sort of just traditional, regular day-to-day stuff and being able to connect with colleagues and people from other places and hearing insights and learning about things that you ordinarily don't hear about. So
And being able to go the back and forth, the Q&A in conversational mode rather than... in a lecture hall and mic fright and public speaking fear and all those types of things that lock up some of the conversation.
Absolutely. Totally.
Really? You're agreeing with me, huh?
But you
forgot the head bob when you said totally.
Remember that this moment that I agreed.
Yeah. Put that down as a red letter day.
Yep.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Jan Capps from Humboldt State. Jen, as we consider some of the future, now Humboldt has already changed itself significantly in the last 18 months.
Yes.
Okay. But you're not at the end of the trail yet.
No. We're still trying to teach you our new name because you just said Humboldt State.
Did I?
Yeah.
Fine.
Had to give it back to you, sorry.
Thanks. No. Yep. It's the only way I kind of keep it between the lines.
It's all good.
What's the next 12-month window look like as far as new offerings or refinements?
Uh-huh.
Where's that going?
Yeah, great question. The new academic programs associated with our polytechnic designation actually don't start until next year. So this year has been about bringing in new faculty. We have 22 new tenure-track faculty that started last week.
So they're gearing up?
Yeah, so they're helping to support the program build-out, helping to support recruitment, teaching some courses.
Kind of getting their feet wet a little bit?
Exactly, getting them set to help also support recruitment and retention efforts to try to figure out how we make sure when we stand up these programs that they're successful.
Does the faculty go out on recruiting trips?
They will be.
That's cool.
Yeah, so thinking about what that would be like for a prospective student to actually talk to somebody that's going to be teaching their class. And so that's a different strategy than we've employed.
But it's real.
Absolutely.
Is it abnormal or unique?
I don't know. I suspect in some places do it probably more to the private, smaller kinds of schools, but really wanting to do that outreach so that, like I say, prospective students and families can really talk face-to-face with
Yeah, I would
with
think most
faculty.
Of it might mm-hmm. have been connected to, like, alumni gatherings and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Where you bring a couple of them in and kind of showcase.
Exactly.
Rather than real recruitment like the sports mm-hmm. guys do.
You bet.
That's
you bet.
Cool.
Yeah. And so doing those pieces, the other thing that we're working on is not only, you know, there's eight new bachelor's programs, one new master's program that'll start in 2023, also working through certificate programs because really feel like that's important. So thinking about information technology, cybersecurity, sustainability certificates, these aren't full bachelor's degrees, but you take a few courses and can get that content expertise that can help you within your existing position or be more marketable for
kind of like a minor?
Yeah, kind of, but directly aligned with specific kind of workforce skills. Minors sometimes do that, sometimes are a little bit more kind of theoretically based. It sort of depends.
Right, but that 5 or 6 classes mm-hmm. in that area of emphasis.
You bet, exactly. And so like cybersecurity, you can imagine that would be beneficial for people to have a bit of concentrated expertise in that, and that could help to uplift them in an existing position or go after promotion, that sort of thing. The next wave is also starting to think, unfortunately, higher ed has a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of different steps that we have to navigate through to get academic programs approved. And there's some value to that, I guess, with respect to having lots of eyes on what we're doing. But as part of our polytechnic planning, we're also going to launch some additional degree programs by 2026 and by 2029. And so really working to figure out what those programs are now, because my goal is to launch them by 2026, if not earlier, and really wanting to focus on health degree programs to help support some of the workforce shortages in the area.
You mean DHHS and the hospitals?
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And is that a flexibility that the Polytech, system, designation, I guess,
mm-hmm.
allows? Because in the past, it didn't seem as if that formerly named school was that flexible. In those areas, it was more, here's what we're doing,
mm-hmm.
like it or leave it, rather than embracing the community. Or is that administration attitude?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of several things. You're right. I mean, prior to all of these academic degree programs associated with Polytechnic being passed through all these hoops, and they'll be starting in 2023, the only new academic program we had in a long while, confirmed by everyone I've talked to, was the nursing program. And the nursing program really wasn't new. It was brought back from the dead. It had existed before.
Yeah, it was resurrected, yeah.
It was, but previous to that, it had been, somebody told me, 20 years since we had had a new academic program. And that is odd to me. I've not been at an institution that didn't kind of reflexively add programs and stop programs.
You're very stoic, I guess.
Yeah. So I think helping to work with faculty and staff and administration sort of all getting on the same page to go, hey, this isn't working, right? So being stagnant with respect to what we're offering isn't working. We need to align ourselves much more with what the workforce is needing, what the community is needing, and what California, what the priorities are set forth by the state, things like fire, right? Fire mitigation or climate resilience or healthcare, those types of things. And if we align our academic programs with those things, then in all likelihood, they're going to be more successful. And bing, that happened, right? And it just so happens that Polytechnic, because it's sort of this emphasis on four fields, natural science, applied science, engineering, and technology, a lot of those opportunities exist in those four fields. So
it's kind of the whole STEAM push, isn't it?
Yeah, STEAM includes art.
STEAM and STEM.
Yeah. So, and math is part of STEM or STEAM. I leave math off, but I guess I don't mean to.
It's kind of folded in.
Exactly.
With
it's inferred, in my opinion. And anything related to STEM or Polytechnic includes math.
It's like breathing.
Correct.
Yes, you need to breathe too, in addition to eat and drink. Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. You got it.
See, I could be one. How's that for a little fear? Yeah, I almost got you. Maybe that makes up for saying Humboldt S.
Okay.
Maybe.
All right, we'll see.
KINS. Yeah. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Meet Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Jen Capps from Cal Poly Tech Humboldt. Artificial intelligence. Okay, now it's back to lack of intelligence. I'm back.
AI's a thing.
The curriculum, the certification programs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that sounds cool. For these new majors, there's a standard. Certification may be the wrong term to use, but a standard that they have to qualify by in order to be able to be recognized? Is that fair?
Yeah. So the term is specialty accreditation. Not every program has specialty accreditation, but nursing is a good example. Engineering is a good example. When you have these technical, kind of very specific degree programs that require specific skills and competencies, there's usually a national organization that you have to map your degree program to. And then
so they submit, is it like a syllabus of each of the classes that are offered to achieve that degree? Or are they looking at, show me your game plan, show me your class synopsis?
Yeah.
Show me the textbook. I mean, how detailed do they get?
It's pretty detailed. I mean, part of it is what you just described. Usually there's a list of standards or requirements that a program has. Like, you have to offer these kinds of courses in these sorts of areas. You need to demonstrate that you have facilities and resources, instructors that have the background and the knowledge to teach the courses.
So kind of like a white paper.
But pretty detailed. And then you have accreditors, people that are anointed sort of specialty accreditors that come in every couple of years and then evaluate and make sure that you're still up to standards.
The school has that, the accreditation program.
Yeah. So
as well. So it's it's by department or by class, by discipline? How do they?
So the university is accredited by WASC. I know.
Boy, does that bring up, I've been on a couple school boards.
Okay,
dog and pony time, okay.
Yeah, so there's a couple of different sort of university or college accrediting bodies. WASC is the one that we use primarily in California. And essentially, to go to a college or university, you need an accrediting body so that otherwise federal financial aid can't be utilized. And so most institutions have to seek that accreditation. And it's the same kind of thing, just broader. Like, it's saying that we have instructors that have the skill to teach courses, that we have classrooms and facilities, and we offer support services, those kinds of things that we assess lots and lots of detail. But then the different degree programs, like I said, some of them have sort of, I air quote, specialty accreditation, because there's a next level of detail and depth that needs
like
to be
additional
evaluated.
Scrutiny.
Exactly. Exactly. And some don't. And I think there's pros and cons to that additional scrutiny. Sometimes it can feel like handcuffs and you can't be creative and innovative and do things that are forward thinking.
I would think one of the fun things for developing a program and then being part of it for the initial phases, flexibility to respond to the marketplace.
Yeah.
Okay, now after you've been doing it for 10 years, mm-hmm. well, you know, this is how we've done it now, and you start getting into the ruts mm-hmm. and the inertia instead of that kind of wide-eyed, bushy-tailed, okay, how do we mm-hmm. do, and what's the best approach today, and then we'll look at it again tomorrow.
You got it. And, you know, the other thing, we're not just focusing on our new programs, but also looking at our existing degree programs and giving faculty opportunity to go back and look at the curriculum.
I would think heat's on for those guys to say, okay, we've seen this excitement in this new. Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about your program and how you're doing mm-hmm. instead of mm-hmm. this is how we've done it the last 10 years.
Yeah, and I think, in all fairness, I think it's hard every semester when you're getting ready to teach a bunch of classes and get back to it, the energy to really dig into what's working and what isn't and have the bandwidth to do that. It's hard. You're like, oh, man, I have to just go and teach my classes. So we're really trying to create some space and some resources to support people to go back and really look, hey, is this still relevant? Like, this course hasn't been modified in a really long time, or the focus of your whole degree program, maybe it needs to shift a little bit because things are shifting in the market, right? That's our
thing. Can it be as basic, Jen, as a textbook?
Yeah, that's part of it.
You know, and that mm-hmm. you're using something that was originally written 35 years ago and it's been updated, but it's still 35 years old.
Yeah.
Let's find something different.
Well, and one thing that a lot of folks are moving to is open source materials, and so not having a book. So
that
using
means the internet?
So, well,
Wikipedia?
So very carefully, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So a textbook is made up of, as you know, I mean, a textbook is made up of information from journal articles and experts, right? So why use the textbook? Why not just go to those?
Go to the source.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And often, you know, through universities, you can access those materials for free, and then it cuts out the cost for the student.
I would imagine that the textbook manufacturing lobby isn't really tickled with some of those choices. I've always thought, you know, if you have English lit,
mm-hmm.
okay, so you buy a Chaucer, you get a mm-hmm. Shakespeare book, you get, you know, whatever the emphasis is.
Sure.
Bing. There's your textbooks for this semester, and next semester we're going to be buying different books.
Yep.
But you're paying retail instead of mm-hmm. the accelerated price points that a lot of the textbook manufacturers have been at.
Well, yeah, so you're right, and that's an interesting point. And thinking about when I the idea of a bookstore, so that's an interesting. We could segue into the bookstore being in Arcata and Eureka now, or the campus store rather. Students don't go into a traditional bookstore.
We're now even
and buy books. Yes,
bookstore, campus store, Humboldt S and Cal Poly Humboldt. We're now even.
Okay, all right.
Self-induced. Those are always the best.
All right.
Okay.
All right. But yeah, if students don't buy books the way they did before, they buy them online, they rent them, they borrow them, they don't buy them at all. I mean, there's all sorts of things. It's not like going in with your list, marching into the bookstore and looking for the book, that huge book on the shelf, and then going in the checkout. It's totally different.
But, okay, so for some of us experienced folks,
uh-huh.
that would be weird.
Yep.
Because for me, the textbook was also my notebook.
Yeah, fair enough.
And doing the doodles and referencing and highlighting and working it, using it as a resource rather than just something you buy and then hopefully the bookstore buys back at the end of the semester.
Correct. And you, my friend, are
dinosaur.
And myself and some of our faculty, that we go back to our own experience and say, well, that's what the students don't, they're doing everything on their computer.
Yeah. It's, it would be interesting to see what their notebooks are like.
Right.
To see, are they, or are they mm-hmm. in the computer, then the computer crashes,
mm-hmm. yep.
or gets lost, or goes in water.
Yep.
Yeah. I guess maybe that's experience, huh?
I agree.
Ha! Huh? All right. I knew it counted for something. KINS, News Information Time, it's 8:42.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Jen Capps from Cal Poly Humboldt. 5 years from now, new programs in place. Mm-hmm. Does the physicalness of the school campus look similar, or are there a lot of investments in those arenas as well?
Oh, there's a tremendous amount of investment. Part of the investment from the state, that $458 million, $433 million of it was investment in physical space. So it will be student housing. It will be academic space, science and engineering buildings. It will look really different, much more.
Is there a schematic somewhere that says, or you could go to and go, see kind of what it would look like?
What it's going to look like? Yeah, there are, and okay. I'll have to see. We have a Polytechnic website associated with our transition to Polytech, and I'll have to see. But that's those sort of phased. What building is kind of coming up when exists that phase planning? So I'll talk to Mike Fisher, who's our facilities manager, AVP, and then Eric Riggs, who's the dean of our College of Natural Resources and Sciences. They co-lead the infrastructure group, which includes five subgroups. Like, it's that big of a endeavor.
I would think that, that's a big fish.
Yeah.
Parking's always been a challenge.
Uh-huh.
Is there a reliance on that there's going to be continued need for parking, or is there this push about, well, you know, Davis has got 25,000 bicycles. And we've got skateboards, and, mm-hmm. and we're going to go eco-groove. Even though the population is going to increase at the school, we're going to keep the same amount of parking spots as we have now.
The planning for parking is infused into all the building space, and so parking is part of the conversation. So
more than just faculty.
Yes.
That you always more used than... to torque me out, too.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I kept hearing parking was an issue, and I didn't.
Five blocks away, and yet faculty parking is wide open.
Okay.
All right. Roll the dice every once in a while.
Really? Because I don't think faculty would say that, but we'll see. But I had never seen the campus packed until yesterday.
Oh.
In this entire time. And it was. I was like, oh, there actually aren't any parking spaces.
Hmm.
That's kind of a good thing.
Hmm.
But
now we understand how 1 and 1 equals 2.
Right? You know, I came from an urban campus previously, and there was no expectation of parking. You had to figure out something different. But this is obviously a completely different area. There you had bus, you had light rail, you had all kinds of other ways you could get to campus. Certainly that's more limited here.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, I don't know the Davis campus as well, but we do understand that there any buildings that we put up there needs to be an expectation of including parking. Yeah.
What is going to be the reference for the hotel that's in Valley West, if that's a successful program or not? Because it would seem like, boy, that's a really good gap management mm-hmm. approach until whatever the plans are,
uh-huh.
more dorms, higher capacity, whatever it is,
right.
Come into a play,
mm-hmm.
that I would think is there, unless you happen to be an apartment landlord owner.
Okay, yeah.
But, you know, right now, you know, they're full, too.
You're absolutely correct. We had, so that the Comfort Inn is that we are subleasing is full. So it's about 96 students or so. We had a wait list of students seeking to get into the institution but could not get housing on campus or off campus. And so that's, and we were afraid we were going to lose those students. And so that's why we used that. And so we were successful in basically clearing the wait list, supporting students to find off campus housing at apartments in the community, getting them on campus housing or in that off campus.
That's a pretty unique for our area. Is mm-hmm. that unique? Traditionally?
Well, you know what? I think there's stories popping up that this is becoming an issue at other campuses, too, and other campuses in the nation are utilizing similar approaches. I'm not sure if that has to do with how The population has sort of moved to different places because of the pandemic. Like if people have moved out of urban areas into more rural areas or whatever, and then that's impacting the housing availability around certain college towns.
Yeah, I wonder what, like UCLA or USC,
right?
You know, if they don't have those issues.
Yeah, I
and
don't
their
know.
Student body population is down, or mm-hmm. or the dynamics have changed mm-hmm. within.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not sure about that. So. But I do know I had seen a few stories here and there that other campuses were doing similar things to try to meet the needs of the
student. So you're not a trendsetter all by yourself, uh-huh. but you're out there on that top 5%.
You know, trying to support the needs of our students. But, yeah, we'll see. I just didn't want, you know, we have this increased interest. You know, we were in a free fall, and I hate to say that, but for some years of our enrollment just tanking and is turning around.
The freshman class is up?
Yes, by about 300 students.
Healthy up.
Yep.
All good. Right. Nice to see you.
All right, you too.
All right. Enjoy
Thank
your
you.
Weekend.
Thank
Everybody
you.
Else also. See you on Monday. Bye.